The Good Times Everton podcast with Kevin Melling and Liam Knight, brewing the toffees since 1995.
I'm saying it's not just this season. 27 years.
Question one, listener, have you heard the good news? That's right, he is quizzing. AKA the next Good Times Everton pub quiz has been announced, taking place on Thursday 17th of April 2025 at our official boozer, the Excelsior on Dale Street. What better way to kick off your long Easter bank holiday weekend than with six rounds of Evertonia? There's a £40 bar tab for the winning team, plus different ever-related swag of varying quality to be won throughout the night, and it's just £2 per player to enter. Put it in your diary, 7:30pm kickoff on Thursday 17th of April at the Excelsior.
Hi guys, this is the interview episode for 2013-2014. I'm joined by Warren Doyle of the Blue Room. A lot of you probably recognise it as Dulcet Tones from there. He's a regular contributor to Weekly, Subs Weekly in the Mailbag, some of their brilliant content, and even has represented them pretty well on Five Live a few times. I remember hearing them talk eloquently after we got eviscerated by Brighton towards the end of Frank Lampard's reign, and he kept it together a lot better than I did the next day. So, Warren, thanks for joining us. First question, obviously, very grateful for you coming on, but when I said to you, do you want to come on, why was it you chose 13-14?
Well, thank you for having me on. I've just been talking a little bit off there, and I was saying to you how I've listened to the first bit of your 08-09 part one. And I've really enjoyed it. So it's my kind of show, a bit of nostalgia and a bit of memory jogging from seasons that I've been watching Everton and stuff. So to answer your question though, with regards to this season, I think not necessarily my favourite season watching Everton from a social point of view, even though I had a great social year with my mates and stuff. Yeah. But this is by far and away my favourite season watching Everton. Everything about this season was just magic. And I know we didn't quite make the Champions League in the end, but it was the first season, I think, we had a few good seasons, obviously, under Moyes, but it was the first season when I thought, this Everton team's brilliant. Like, we're going to go on here and do some really good stuff in the next couple of years. We've got a great manager who's progressive and forward-thinking. We've got a great side here that, you know, there's young players coming through, there's young players signed, we've got a couple of experienced players mixed in. Everything just felt really, really like as one, and it just felt like such a good season. And I thought, I was convinced we were going to go on from there and really progress and do some really good stuff in the next coming years. Obviously, that didn't happen. But yeah, it was a brilliant season. I had some fantastic away days, and the home games as well were just absolutely brilliant during that season. So without doubt, I think definitely in terms of what happened on the pitch, one of me best. And I had some great days off it as well at some of the away games that we had during that season.
That's brilliant. And to be honest with you, I agree. When I look back on this season, as you say, dripping doing 08-09, I think there's an argument that there's Moyes round late noughties probably had the most consistent Everton team of the Premier League era. But if you were to tell me a team in a season is the best Everton team in the Premier League era, I would actually say it's this one. And a bit like yourself, I was convinced once the summer came round, although it was disappointing we didn't get in the Champions League, I was like, it's coming. You know, it felt like there were exciting things. So just to go back to what you said there, obviously you had a lot of good days. What was your best away in this season? What was the away that and obviously it might be hard to choose, but there's one where you go, that was a great day, a great game.
Yeah, there's a couple honourable mentions. First of all, Hull on the last day. I think that it just felt like the culmination of a brilliant season. And like I said, we felt all of us as fans were going on to bigger and better here. And it was just a brilliant end to the season, a great 2-0 win. Mm-hmm. And I think it was summed up by the fact that Nikita Jelovic had left us at this point and he'd gone to Hull.
Yeah.
And we were 2-0 up at the time and he got a free kick about 25 yards away. And the whole away end was going, oh, and wanting him to score. And I think he just hit it wide and everyone in the away went, oh, like as if it was an Everton, you know, free kick. And I just thought that was just, a symptom really of the season, just everyone really enjoying it. And Jelovic went off and he got a hero's reception in the away end, everyone on the feet, you know, clapping him off, singing his name. So that was a great away day. And there was some other, I'm just looking now at some of the results. Newcastle away was one of the best nights, I think. The 3-0 up there was just amazing, incredible.
Played some great football that night. I mean, Barkley's got his football off, but Osman's is fantastic that game.
And Osman's goal just reminds me now how much of his type of player and him we miss in the current side.
Yeah.
But that was an unreal performance. I went to Man United away, and that was just chaos when that goal went in. I mean, that was to score so late on at Old Trafford, somewhere where we hadn't got a result for decades, against the champions as well. And I know the adage of Moyes being in the home dugout as well, which was, you know, a bit of revenge there too. That was incredible. But my favourite away day of that season was the West Ham 3-2. Lukaku's first goal, but them two free kicks by Leighton Baines. I had just the best day from start to finish. I've got a couple of mates who live sort of Bersko, Rufford's way. So when I used to go to the ways back then, we'd always get the train from Wigan. And we'd get into Wigan quite early, and there was a pub, it's not open anymore, there was a pub called The Venue in Wigan, right by the train station in Wigan, and by Wallgate. So I don't know if those of you who don't know Wigan, you've got Wigan Wallgate, and then you cross the roads and you've got Wigan Northwestern, which is the main station to, you know, transfer to London or, you know, Liverpool, whatever, Preston, Scotland, whatever. So we get off at Wallgate, and this must be about half eight in the morning, and we go into The Venue because it's the only place open to have a drink. And I'm not kidding you, there's about, I'd say, at least a dozen our fellas in there drinking as if it was normal, like a normal time of day. And I said, this is brilliant, this. So we had a drink, got the train, a few beers down, met up with a few other people on the way down there as well. Found a really good pub in Camden, had a few drinks there. All of us got the tube then, and we're all like, just really feeling good about the season, feeling good about what.
I think London away days, when they're good, are brilliant for that, though, aren't
they? Oh, yeah. I mean, they're not great when you lose and when it's cold and dark and all that and miserable, but this just felt like a really good, everyone was feeling good and chatting to each other and having a laugh on the tube. And we get off at West Ham, and I used to love Upton Park. I mean, I'd never seen us lose there, but I used to love going there anyway, just because I just thought it's an old style ground. It's a proper part of London. It felt unique. Yeah. It felt genuine. And we go 1-0 down, get it back to 1-0 with Baines' first free kick. And then we go 2-1 down, he gets the second one. And my mate just tapped me and he went, he's going to do a sheedy here. And he scored that. And I think I've still got the bruise to this day on my shin. It was just bad. And we were happy with 2-0. And I think the Everton mentality goes, yeah, we'll take that. Because we'd not been used to scoring late or winning when we shouldn't have won. Coming back from behind and getting a result. And then he brings Lukaku on. I think Jelovic had struggled, actually. And he brought Lukaku on second half. And
he came off for half time, didn't he? Switched the system around and brought McCarthy and Lukaku on for the debut. So he wasn't happy with what he was seeing, was he?
He was trying to be loyal to Jelovic. And Jelovic had been great the season before. But he just wasn't hitting the heights that Lukaku could. And Lukaku comes on and straight away you could see the difference. And when he scores that header, I mean, I thought it was bedlam for the two free kicks, but we went absolutely mad. And I remember walking out the ground and I think at this point we'd gone 8 or 9 unbeaten at the start of the season, something like that. And everyone was singing, we are unbeatable. And it was like a feeling I'd never felt as an Everton fan, that we were witnessing a really good side and could do something. So, yeah, the West Ham game was, I think, it's not my favourite all time, but to this day, it's still one that I look back on fondly and crave it, really. Crave it, and we get away days like that again, because it was just brilliant. And you know what it's like, it's sweet going the game and seeing the result, but when you share it with people and your mates, and we had a cracking train journey back, we were drinking, and we ended up going to the warehouse in Preston. So for those of you who don't know, it's like a indie disco sort of nightclub. Oh, mate, it's three floors, it's students everywhere, and it was like, well, I was still like of student age at the time. I think I'd just not long come out of uni, so, and we were there till about 1-2 in the morning, so we've been up since what, crack of dawn, and we were, you know, up till crack of dawn. It was just a fantastic day.
Well, that's brilliant, and you know, it is, I think that's a game that is rightly fated by a lot of Everton fans in the good times here. And when you were talking about Baines' free kick, one thing I could see, I didn't have the fortune to go to that game, but there's a wonderful still where he goes to see the sec, take the second free kick, and there's one West Ham fan with his head on his hands on his head, and another one with his back turned. And I think what is even madder about it is, given how good Leighton's left foot was, that was his last free kick for Everton. They scored, wasn't it?
I know.
It's, when you say that he's still in the team for the majority of the next 7 years, and you know, it just seems a bit mad. But he was brilliant that season. He'd been chased in the summer by his former manager, David Moyes, who'd moved across to Manchester United. In the summer, it's kind of going back a little bit, but in the summer, how are you feeling about the managerial change? Because obviously, you're a similar age to me. I was born in 87, you were born in 86. A lot of our Everton consumption have been under one manager, and we'd known, there'd been a little bit of change in the mid-90s, but in the previous 15 years, we'd only had two managers in Walter Smith and David Moyes. So how are you feeling about Roberto Martinez taking the hot seat?
I wanted him. I was so happy when we got him. And it wasn't just because of the FA Cup win for Wigan, but I just, every time he spoke on Match of the Day or on Sky or whatever it was, I just thought he came across really, really well. And I remember seeing an interview he'd done. I don't know if you remember when Spurs beat Wigan 9-0 that season at home.
Yeah.
And the following season, Wigan beat them 1-0 at White Hart Lane.
Yeah.
And he made the choice of picking the exact same team as the one that lost the 9-0 game. Okay. And they interviewed him about it and he asked them a question. And he said, I wanted to be brave and I wanted the players to be brave and I wanted them to realise that they were good enough to beat this Spurs team and that they were good enough players and the 9-0 wasn't a fair reflection of what went on that day. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to give them a chance and I believed. And all he talked about was his belief in his players. I believe in them. I think they're brilliant. We wanted to go out. We wanted to dictate the game and we wanted to play. And I'm listening to him and I'm thinking, you're the manager of Wigan. Like, if you've got this mentality for Everton and we're already quite a good team, but we're not quite breaking that glass ceiling, I wonder if you could shatter it. And then he goes and wins the FA Cup and that was it. Then I was like, if I didn't want him before, I want him now. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want Moyes to go because I just thought Moyes was a safe pair of hands and I liked Moyes and I still do. Mm-hmm. I think he did the dirty on us a little bit with the contract situation towards the end and then trying to get Fellaini and Baines on the cheap.
I agree with that, but you know, his work was brilliant in the main.
Oh, and when you look back now and you consider what we've gone through in the last few years, you have to accept that he did a brilliant job, and he did, and he was a good fit for Everton. We were a good fit for him, and he really did bring through some really good players. But there did become a little bit of a bit stale, I think, and you could see ahead in that way. And I think it was a change for everyone. And with the staleness of the side and the staleness of him being Everton manager for so long, mm-hmm. I think there was a theme or an idea of that we were playing, I wouldn't say negative football, but we were playing quite safe. And he was known, Moyes, for his negative subs, wasn't he? Bringing on, you know, defenders for strikers and things like that. And I think I just looked at Martinez and thought, this is someone who won't do that. This is someone who'll go for games. This is someone who'll create a little, you know, or get us playing higher up the pitch. And I just felt that, his style of football would suit the squad we had because we just needed that little bit of extra. Yeah. And then when he obviously brought in the likes of James McCarthy and Lukaku and a couple of others around him, Gareth Barry, phenomenal sign. And I thought, phenomenal. I'm said phenomenal there. That's all about Roberto, isn't it? Yeah. But he was just a brilliant sign. And I thought, this team now is starting to look like a team that I'd want a young, progressive manager to have. Mm-hmm. And so I was sold on day one on Martinez. And I think he'd, you know, I know we got the three draws at the beginning and, you know, I think nowadays if that happened, if there was three draws with a new manager today, I think there'd be question marks raised. But I remember at the time, a lot of people sort of going, no, do you know what? I can see what he's trying to do.
Especially when we played at Norwich. I mean, in Norwich, I know we get kind of pegged back by a fluke by Ricky Van Wolfswinkel, but, you know, Ross Barkley, we spoke about it in episode 4, we did 12-13. Moyes had not fancied him. If anything, he used him as a sub against Wigan to kind of go, have your boy. But it was that belief you're talking about in players that he'd emboldened them. And I definitely get that. I think your point about being brave tactically is brilliant because as we've been speaking, I've just remembered the sub that he made in one of the games that you'd never see Moyes make in a million years. Leighton Baines gets injured against Liverpool. And rather than bringing on Kyle Obiedo on defence, he brings on Gerard Deulofeu, drops Barry into left back and takes the handbrake off. And it's like, wow, How bold is that? And
exactly.
Taylor Fayo has a few chances, to be fair, doesn't he?
Well, Taylor Fayo should have scored, I think, two that day, because he ran through the whole Liverpool team and he should have buried it. But again, it was something we'd not seen for the previous 10 years. And it just felt like we got over being stable, and we got over being, you know, just another Premier League team that does well. Mm-hmm. And it felt like this manager, he'd won the FA Cup, he'd probably not been able to unleash his potential at Wigan. And you felt that Everton was his chance. And certainly for that first season, I mean, I know there's a few naysayers about Martinez, and I know it turned sour in the end. And look, he did make a lot more errors than he did, you know, things right especially towards the end of his tenure at Everton. But there's still a large part of me that thinks if he'd have just done a couple of things different, he still could have made it work. And, you know, getting us to two... I know it's not a barometer for success, but, you know, good runs in cups, getting us to two semi-finals, good runs in Europe. Mm-hmm. And it was just the odd game now and again where he just really let himself down in later on, you know, when in his spell as manager. But that first season especially, I just thought, wow, this is the football, this is the season I've been waiting for all my life to see Everton have. And barring, you know, those fellas who'd seen title wins in the 80s, I think a lot of older Everton fans will say, yeah, barring them, this is the best season I think that we've seen us play. I just really enjoyed it from start to finish. And I think we were all ready for a Martinez-type manager to come in and just not... He didn't make wholesale changes, and he did well initially of keeping Moyes' squad, but then just adding parts to it, because it was already a decent squad.
Defense, it felt like he had the base of the defence, didn't it? And then it was like, I've got that. I brought Barry McCarthy in to kind of sit in and drop in for the fullbacks because Baines and Coleman bomb on, which, to be fair, Moyes was good at getting his fullbacks pushed up the last few years. And I do think there's a bit of revisioning about the type of football he played in the later part of Everton stint. But I do agree with you. I think he got that blend just right. And it was like he had those midfielders sitting in, the defenders sitting in. It was like, to the creative players, go and express yourself. Break the line, swap positions. And some of his tactical innovation in that season, it's actually something that, because of the way his reign ended, it probably gets glossed over. And one such innovation came in a performance that I know we're interviewing here, but my opinion is I still think the best performance I've ever seen from any Everton team, when he puts Romelu Lukaku on the right wing against Nacho Monreal against Arsenal, and Everton are just absolutely magic. And that wasn't just because of how good the players were, but the system, everything worked, didn't it?
That Arsenal game, I was convinced after that. I'm lying because I think the game, it was a game... Oh, I've forgotten it now. I'll have to have a look on the iPad just to double check what game it was. There was a game before that, and I thought, we're going to do Champions League here. But this Arsenal game, I was convinced. I thought we might even get third because we were playing so well. I'm just going to look. Just let me just find in a minute, because I think it was the... Oh, hang on. Excuse me. Sorry. There was a game. Oh, I'll tell you when it was. It was the Swansea game. And I know it was a lot earlier in the season, the away game, the Swansea away game.
Yeah.
But again, it was another example of Everton not doing an Everton, typical Everton thing. We went and won a game that we shouldn't have really won, or we went for the winning and we got it.
Two great goals as well. Two brilliant goals.
Absolutely. And we were this brave new young side. And but going forward to the Arsenal game, I felt from then leading up to it, I thought we're better than them. We're playing better than them. They're not as good as us at the minute, and the results showed that. And this game, we're going to prove why we are.
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a double-edged sword sticking Lukaku on the right wing, because, yes, that game in particular, it was a tactical masterstroke because he destroyed Arsenal that day. And it allowed players like Naismith, it allowed players like Morales, it allowed players like Baines, it allowed players like Deulofeu, who came on later on. It allowed them to have a bit more freedom in the middle and dictate things, because they would... Lukaku was drawing defenders away. Where it was the double-edged sword for me was we went to the well with that a couple of times, and I think once teams figured it out, it was a waste of a position for him, because his main strength was playing through the middle, and he's proven that throughout his career. But in that particular game, absolutely. But I thought it was just a clear pathway to Champions League following that. I thought we were unbelievable. And I remember it was a Sunday game against Arsenal, but I remember it being one of the best Sunday games I've ever been to for atmosphere. And do you know what as well? Yeah. Not just that game, Liam, but there was a lot of games, home games during that season. The ground was bouncing, all the old songs were coming out. The 80s songs were coming out, but you know, Neville, South, that was getting sung regularly at home games because we were playing well and we were winning and everyone was enjoying.
You expecting to win as well, weren't you? You were going in thinking not just well, expecting to win, but also with a bit of panache. You think we can put this team to the sword, yeah?
There was, and that's why the defeat against Sunderland was such a big shock just before Boxing Day, wasn't it? Because we'd blown everyone away in our path, especially at home. And they were languishing at the time, Sunderland. They might even got relegated that season. You'll correct me if I'm wrong.
No, they didn't. But they were in the dogfight until towards the end. Then because Gus Poyet come in to replace the Canio, and they got to the Carling Cup final rally. But yeah, I mean, even that day we battered them. Ki Sung Young, who scored, was really good for them that day. Mm. But even that day with 10 men to go to put up Martinez, we're going for it at the end. We got a corner kick even, and Joel Robles goes up. You know, that abandon is not something you'd seen in previous Everton teams.
No, and even if people come off the ground, they were frustrated at the results at that, but I think everyone thought, you know, that's just a blip. And then we went and put Southampton away the very next game, and you thought, right, we're back on course now. But I do remember the whole home game when P&R scored.
Mm-hmm.
And for large parts of that, we were on top, but we just couldn't get that goal.
Yeah.
And it was another example, again, of an Everton team grinding out the results, because we were used to doing the dirty things under Moyes, and that is doing him a disservice, because we did play some really good football under Moyes, and I agree with you when you say that. But you always felt that Moyes had a dodgy draw or a dodgy home defeat in him, or a dodgy result.
Definitely.
Or 3 points that we could have got that we never did because we played it safe. And P&R comes on and rolls it in, and I don't know if you remember, he goes over and turns the South African flag round because it was the wrong way round, which was brilliant. But we go to the pub after, and there was a fella in the pub who he sort of drinks with us, but we don't really know him, but he knows one of the lads, and he's a bit known for being a bit miserable. And oh, here he is again, like we make a joke for it. Here's him again, what's he going to moan about today? And he came in and he was going, I've not heard the ground like that. That's the best it's been since the 80s. It was bouncing in there. And it just felt like a season like that. It just felt like a season full of that, where all the fans were excited. And I think as Evertonians, especially, it's got lost a little bit recently with what we've gone through in the last few years. But we are so ready for something big to happen. And when it does hopefully eventually happen again, I think you'll see just joy and happiness and celebration like you've never seen before, because we've waited so long, and it's like the pressure funnel is ready to burst if it ever does happen. And if it does happen, and the point I'm trying to make is this is what this season felt like. It felt like
anticipation, wasn't it? That it was coming, something was coming, whatever it was. Yeah.
And everyone was just like, this is what we've been waiting for. We've had misery for 30 years. This is it. And it was such a happy season, and it was such an enjoyable season. And even the losses we had were not, bar the derby away, which is a tough one, obviously. But even the losses we had, and I remember going to City, and this was just when they started really turning the screw, City, and we lost 3-1. And I remember everyone coming out the ground going, do you know what? You're going to get result. Yeah, we played well. We took the lead as well.
Yeah, the captain scored, didn't
he? And I remember people saying, you know, we're going to get results like that. They're a good side. We're not quite ready for, you know, coming away to a ground like this and winning. So we've done all right. And then we went on another unbeaten run after that. And just a very happy season. And probably the last season I remember where it just felt like everyone was really connected and going to games, like you said, and expecting and knowing we were going to win, which is something we've not had for a long time.
No, definitely not. You spoke really eloquently about so many brilliant games there, and you know it's a season where I think, because we're a similar age as well, it's fun because it's probably the best season we've had as adults and etc.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna ask you a few tough questions now, because I want you to pick a few things for me. Who was your favorite player or best player in this season? Who's the player where you go, they stood out for me in particular season? Because I think this is one of the harder seasons to choose from, not because, like recent seasons where there's not much choice, you're almost spoiled for choice.
You are. That is a tough one, because we'd been crying out from under Moyes for a really good striker. And when Lukaku comes in, it felt like we'd really got someone who was genuinely not just Premier League quality, but one of the elite and probably one of the most feared young strikers in Europe. I don't think that's too much of a an over-exaggeration to say.
I don't think it is.
No, but I think James McCarthy was a great sign as well, and I felt so bad for him the way it finished for him in Everton, because I thought he was a proper Everton player in the sense that he would be a fan's favourite the way he worked and the way he played.
Definitely. He was brilliant that season. He really surprised me. I mean, Gareth Barry, a friend who was a City fan, had told me how good Barry was, and he was surprised they let him go. He was aged. But James McCarthy, his ability in that season, really, it shocked me. And it wasn't just how good he was, it's how consistent he was as well.
It absolutely. Well, you've taken the words out of my mouth a little bit there, because I think I'm going to go for my favourite player that season as Gareth Barry, because I was not a Barry fan whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I didn't think he was any good. I thought the whole, when he was tipped to go to Liverpool and they basically shoved Xabi Alonso out the door to replace him with Barry, I thought that was madness, because during that spell when Liverpool had that team, the questions sometimes get asked, if you had to pick one player from Liverpool to play for Everton, and they had Torres and Gerrard, and I used to always say I'd have Xabi Alonso every time. I thought he was a wonderful player. And the fact that they tried to replace him with Gareth Barry, who I didn't think was anywhere near as good. But like you, I knew a few City fans, and they were saying, you don't realise how good he is, you know, like, I'm gutted he's gone. We would have loved to have kept him for another season. No, I'm not having it. And when he made that goal-saving tackle against Chelsea, that was a light bulb moment for me, where I went, all right, okay, he's done that. But he actually played brilliant, and he was just a little bit of experience and a little bit of quality, again, from a title-winning City side he'd been involved with, and, you know, his England career and, you know, the clubs he played for. And I just thought he was absolutely magnificent. And I think, again, he's someone who I dearly love to have today, someone like him.
Oh, I killed him.
He not just held the midfield, but he had the ability to pass a ball as well. He wasn't just the yard dog, was he? He worked so well in tandem with McCarthy, the way them two worked to allow, like you said, the fullbacks to bomb on forward. So whilst Lukaku was incredible and it was brilliant to have an elite striker at the club, whilst James McCarthy was a brilliant signing, and whilst I loved the likes of, you know, Leighton Baines and Stephen Pienaar, who, for me, I still wish we've never replaced them two anyway. But all the love I've got for them, I think Gareth Barry was my favourite player that season.
That's brilliant. And he scores one of my favourite goals in the season. I don't think it's talked about enough. Is one against Norwich when he just opened
a brilliant goal,
5 yards out. It's unbelievable. And just on Stephen Pienaar, because we're going down memory, I know I'll mention it in the main pod, but he does one of my favourite things I've ever seen an Everton player do in the season. He comes on against Aston Villa and he plays a pass for Stephen Naismith. It's only about 5 yards, but it takes the entire defence out at a time when we really need a goal. And it's just like, even though he wasn't playing week in, week out at that point, it was just so nice to see us be able to use players sparingly and win games. But yeah, okay, so you've obviously gone through some great games and that. I'm going to ask you here now, to kind of round it out, about something that is a bit funnier off the field. How did you feel about the badge that Everton sported in 13-14?
So, do you know what? It's funny you say that, because it would have been so Everton for us to win something that year, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That badge forever plastered. And that's the way it felt like it was heading. At the time, when I was a bit younger and probably a little bit more emotional, shall we say, I was livid. I was telling anyone I knew and speaking to anyone I could and putting any message I could online or whatever it was to say how much I hated it. It was a disgrace. And I think nowadays I'd still hate it if it come out tomorrow. But I don't think I'll probably be as emotional about it. I think I'll probably think, well, do you know what? Let other people argue about it online and let them deal with it. But it would have been a shame if that was the badge that we would have saw forever, because we'd have won something. I still would have loved to have rather won something, by the way, in the Champions League place. But no, and what annoyed me more, and I love the way you lads talk so brilliantly and about your kits and about, you know, what boots players were wearing and how players looked if they wore long sleeve or short. I love all that sort of stuff. But I was so gutted that badge was on the away kit, because I loved the Boca Juniors style away kit. I thought it was a brilliant kit, the yellow and the blue. And I went to watch us beat Villa in that when Tim Howard saved that penalty. Again, another brilliant away day.
Oh, I didn't go to that, unfortunately, but I didn't get as many ways this season. But I remember watching it. I watched it in the croch, the baby croch in town. So it was quite lively. But I just remember seeing, and I genuinely think of all the away games I've watched, I don't think I've ever seen limbs like that. I mean, it looked absolutely insane.
it was a season full of that, and of course with the penalty save as well, that added to it, of course.
Yeah.
But I was gutted that that badge was on that kit, because I don't really buy kits that much. Now and again, I'll buy one if it goes on sale or if it's an old kit, you know, to wear at the gym, that type of thing. But I was tempted to buy this because I loved the Boca Juniors style on it. But then you just see that badge, which just looked like it had a big fat arse on it, and I thought, no. So thankfully, it only lasted the one season. But not great memories of that, I'm afraid. And I just think there's so many talented designers, graphic designers, and people like that out there. For them to approve that, I don't know what they were thinking. But we can't be Everton without a little mini kick-off each season, can we? So that was year's one.
If that's your biggest complaint, I suppose it's a good season, my current standards. Yeah. I do think it's just a bit of reading the room. And I'll never forget, I don't know, Darren NSNL on Twitter, who's a brilliant Everton contributor. I remember him quote-tweeting Everton, because when there was a lot of flack coming back when the badge was announced at the end of the previous season, Evan put out a tweet saying, "We're sorry for ruining your weekend." And he was just like, "If you're going to start apologising for ruining my weekend, you've got an awful lot of tweets to put out.
Yeah.
Is it going to be here in a while, lad? So I wouldn't keep that as a trend. Warren, that was lovely to talk about this season with you. It's a season a lot of Evertonians will remember fondly, and hopefully sooner rather than later it'll become a lesser season in our football.
Hopefully it becomes it'd be lovely if it became the norm again, but it's been nice, you know. And I think one of the things I like doing, and I like about your show as well, is I know you covered a lot of seasons which weren't as great, but it's nice to talk about the good times. Pun not intended, by the way. It's nice to talk about some of the better times you've had enjoying watching Everton. And like I said, this season for me, and it's been, you know, it's been nice remembering that and remembering how it can be to support a good team. So yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate. And like I said, thank you so much for having me on. I think it's a great idea what you do, and I think it's a really good show, and it's a brilliant listen. Just like I said to you before when we were off air, you know, it's a nice way to pass the time to listen, and I say that as a compliment, by the way. It's a nice way to pass the time if you're in work or you're driving, and it's a really great listen. So credit to the work that you and Kev do. I think it's a really good show, and keep it up. I hope there's some sequel to the good times era. Anyway, you'll have to go back to the 60s or something.
There are ideas in play, and this might not be the last time that you come along, mate. We might need you to come along to help us on that journey. So, Warren, you've been brilliant as ever.